Moncrief on News Talk.
If you're a fan of Bridgerton, you may well have stayed up half the night watching and today be full of excitement that Penelope Featherington finally got the snog. Whoops, spoiler. Obviously, the show doesn't pretend to be a history lesson, but how accurate or inaccurate is it? Dr. Mary Muldowney is historian in residence for Dublin Northwest at Dublin City Council. Good afternoon, Mary.
Hi, how are you, Sean?
Now, I suppose the look of it, it wouldn't be that accurate, I assume, because it's a multiracial cast, Everybody's beautiful and it's probably cleaner than it was in those days.
I think certainly on the cleanliness end, probably if you could smell them, it wouldn't have been too pleasant either. The thing about it is that, you know, it doesn't seem to pretend to be anything other than what it is, which is a gloriously fun kind of production. I have to confess, I'm not a dedicated fan. I saw a few episodes at the beginning, totally fell for the Duke character, who was very beautiful. But other than that, I kind of lost touch with it. As for historical accuracy, well, you know, as I said, it doesn't set out to be anything. There are elements of it that would have been true, that would have been factual. But for the most part, it's about a very tiny minority of society at the time. And the chances of them being anything like as gorgeous as they all looked were really pretty remote.
Yeah, one would have thought so. But at the same time, a lot of the storylines kind of centre around, you know, finding a mate and, you know, the coming out for the season and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Is that pretty accurate?
That is very accurate for that level of society because it was all about money and inheritance. So a woman who was, you know, maybe aristocratic, but certainly rich and at that level, had to be a childbearer for a start. That would be her primary duty. And so the thing about that was getting married so that they were a legitimate issue and to make sure that the estates and the wealth of a family was protected. So essentially what was happening with all of the lovely dresses and all the rest of it was a parade of women on a market to find a wealthy husband. Mm. And preferably an influential one as well would be even better.
And would it always be the aim? Actually, that's interesting. Whether it's a son or a daughter, if you have a son or a daughter, you're trying to marry up.
Yeah, very definitely. Men were married off to the daughters of similar families and vice versa. But for women, when they got married, they really, you know, it wasn't exactly entering into a life of bliss and enjoyment of the rewards that came. They didn't have a great deal of power. They had very little influence. And while some women were able to be reasonably independent, they were a minority of a minority and much more likely that the best way to benefit from a marriage, if you like, to a wealthy man was for him to die.
Gosh, yeah, well, probably times haven't changed possibly that much for some people. The way it's depicted is that, you know, they go to these grand balls and then they meet somebody and then, you know, he gets the nod from the parents and then that's all happy ever after. Were those kind of matches, though, often arranged in advance?
Oh, yes. I mean, sometimes they were arranged from childhood. You know, that they were very strategic. You know, that it was about building the power, if you like, but certainly the influence within that fairly narrow stratum of society. So if you were thinking, well, okay, Lord, whatever has produced a son and it would be a good idea to increase your own wealth, you'd be doing your best to make sure that your pretty daughter, or not even necessarily pretty, was introduced and was given the best opportunity to show herself off as a likely good wife for the future.
Mm. So would the couple in question have that much choice about the matter?
More than likely not. It depended on how enlightened their parents were. And when you look back at the period, enlightenment didn't seem to be high on the agenda. I mean, it is a period that the Regency years, they're known for art and enlightenment in politically, but there's really very little evidence for that anymore. And the thing about it was that, you know, you just didn't have, as a woman, have any legal rights in most cases, especially as a married woman, because your husband basically took over the ownership. If you brought a big dowry, which was essential, he owned the dowry. And while certain legal protections, they weren't all that effective. Mm. And a woman who, you know, as I said, she could end up with some influence. And I think there's a character in the series, at least there was in the first series anyway, who appeared to have a lot of influence as an independent, very wealthy widow. But that would have been unusual. And quite often a woman could find herself being married off again to somebody else in the extended family, or, you know, on the same basis of making the influence and the arrangement went down.
Yeah. What was in it then for the parents of daughters, in that they had to cough up money to get her married off to someone, she had no power in that relationship. So, and how did her parents benefit from that? Or is it just prestige?
There probably was a fair amount of wheeling and dealing. You know, the marriage contracts were big business. So there would have been, you know, there were lawyers who would have specialised in that kind of. There'd probably be some kind of tie-in so that if you had a situation where a daughter was bringing money, well, because it would go into the new family, there would be maybe not gratitude, but an element of appreciation that would be recognised in perhaps honours or other things being given. You know, it wouldn't have been unusual for a father to be elevated in the peerage, maybe a step or two. And it was all seen as very healthy, which, of course, by our standards, is absolutely atrocious to think about it.
Did this kind of thing happen in Ireland back in the Georgian period?
I have to say, I'm not all that familiar, because one of the things about the Regency, which is when this was set, was that it kind of coincided with the following years from the Act of Union. And of our so-called aristocrats had moved back to their estates in England or whatever. And of course, this was kind of the 19th century, so there's a lot of change here. But I've no doubt that they did, because there was a lot of interchange between these families. So there were a tiny stratum of society, so they kind of had to marry out, if you like, a little bit. And this is what they thought. Acceptable, you know, that you were seeing your children to a great extent as methods of barter.
Yeah. So presumably an aristocratic family here would you know, be over to the cattle mart in London to find a suitor for her rather than do it
here. Before the Act of Union, they would have done it in Dublin Castle. But it would have been, and it was a huge investment, because not just the expense of going and hiring a house and all the rest of it, you had to do your own round of offering entertainment to make sure that you advertised, especially your daughters, as effectively as possible. So you might have afternoon tea dances or balls or whatever. I'm generalizing here because it's not something I'm all that familiar with, but I did think that the episode Bridgerton, probably, that I saw were, I'd say, fairly accurate, except, as I said, you know, for the colour of people's skin to a great extent. I don't think there's been quite so many mixed race and black people as the show shows.
But, yes.
You know, that's current sensibilities, and it's definitely to be welcomed.
Were there any people of colour in those days, especially in the kind of higher echelons of society?
Ah, yes, yeah. I mean, there's some debate, now I haven't exactly followed it in detail, about whether Queen Charlotte, for instance, might have had some connections with black ancestors, because she had family connections with Portuguese royalty, and they would have intermarried with local kings and queens in their colonies. That's one particular case, but there have been black peers in British history for probably 1,500, 2,000 years. And it's great to see so much research being done now about black history. And it would have been, you know, particularly if you're looking back, I mean, a lot of it would have been a result of the slave trade, but they're at higher levels as well. Yeah. Maybe not in quite such large numbers, but Queen Victoria, I mean, it's a horrible thought. She was actually gifted an African, a little girl, whom she then treated as a protege. And she would have lived with the royal family and been, you know, probably treated as a bit of a pet, but at the same time, at least treated very well during Victoria's reign. Now, that's a bit later, obviously, but, you know, the stories are there over the years. It certainly was either in Ireland or in Britain that you never saw a black face until the 20th century.
Mary, thanks a million for speaking with us today. That was Dr. Mary Muldowney, historian in residence for Dublin North West at Dublin City Council.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.